to Excuse My ADHD, a podcast for adults with or who think they may have ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and this is my journey. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining me with Excuse My ADHD. I'm your host, Jeanette, and I am here with a very special guest today, MSP Daniel Johnson. He is a member of Scottish Parliament, a father, husband, and he has ADHD. Welcome, Daniel. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem at all.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got diagnosed? You said you were diagnosed as an adult at 35, I believe, in your speech. So tell me a little bit about how that happened.
So, I mean, I think it was largely driven by my wife, who just sort of made a number of observations about the way I was finding both work, but also just dealing with day-to-day life. And I was working for myself. I was running my own business, but I think really finding things increasingly difficult. And there were a lot of things that were going on both at work, but at home, where things were really kind of spinning out of control. And she said, well, look, I know you were finding things difficult. I know that is something that you are struggling with. Do you think you might have ADHD? And I think really up until that point, hadn't even crossed my mind. But then when I started to look at the, you know, not just those immediate issues, but the wider pattern of symptoms and the explanation of it, it made an awful lot of sense. And that prompted me to, you know, essentially try to find help. And it probably took about a year trying a couple of different things before I kind of really found kind of someone that was able to really provide me with the diagnosis and the help that I needed. I mean, that all in all took probably 2 or 3 years. So, I mean, it was a long process, but one that ultimately, as I say, the thing that really struck me was the way it explained things that I wasn't even looking for explanations for. So there's a sort of pattern of behaviors, a pattern of also experience that it explained, which just made the world and my experience of the world make an awful lot more sense all of a sudden. And that was incredibly useful and a real turning point in my life.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what a lot of us are finding out. I know that resonates really strongly with me because I had a similar experience where my husband had actually brought the same things to attention for me. And once I was diagnosed, I started reading about it, and I had always thought it was the little kid in the classroom who couldn't sit still. That was what ADHD was to me. And when I was told that I had it, I didn't believe it. And after I read about it, it was like, oh my gosh, my entire life now makes sense. I didn't even know I didn't make sense, and now I make sense.
Yeah.
And I've heard that same story from so many people now. And it's kind of shocking because a lot of the people that I have heard it from are around our same age, 30s to early 40s are just now finding out that they have it because there is so much more information out there. But also because I think this is a time in our lives where we've become a lot more responsible. So we have more stress. So all of those inattentive symptoms that we could get away with before are more prominent.
I think there's another thing going on as well, I mean, especially for me, and again, it chimes with a lot of other people who I speak to. You know, I think there are people with ADHD whose symptoms are so chronic that they are pretty obvious and pretty obvious from a very early stage, whereas I think there are others who will, within structured environments, actually get by. And I think people might notice, might think that, you know, people are careless or lazy or whatever, but not so much that they think there's a specific problem. But the moment that those structures of school and then university and indeed maybe even initial employment, but by the time they actually have responsibilities of their own, but they're having to provide their own structure, their brains just can't cope with that. My experience was just not knowing when I was my own boss of what I should be concentrating on next. And what I should be setting deadlines for, and just some simple things around prioritization, which most people find relatively straightforward, but I just couldn't do it. And it was having pretty catastrophic effects. And I think that's the experience of a lot of people, that the moment they're needing to put their own structures, and indeed they're having to have, you know, I think the other thing was becoming an adult, becoming a parent. So you've got those issues, not just at work, but also at home, mm-hmm. in a way that you haven't had before. Those things all come together and collide. And I think that there is, I think, a pattern there of adults with ADHD hitting those points and therefore needing help, because they are either hitting crisis points or getting very close to them.
Yeah, and I think a lot of times then we also suffer the guilt. We have a lot of shame and a lot of guilt around it, because we are told a lot of our lives that we're lazy, or that we're not living up to our potential, or, you know, we're paying the price. We're paying that ADHD tax, and we're forgetting appointments for our kids, or we're forgetting papers that have to be submitted, or not getting them to their games. And so then there's shame involved in that too. And it just keeps building and building, and it makes some of those tasks that are easy and mundane even harder to accomplish, because yes. There is that shame.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot of it. And I don't know. Have you have any of those experiences too?
Yeah. I mean, especially running, you know, when you're running your own business, the possibility of kind of allowing kind of invoices and forms mm-hmm. to build up. And individually, I think, you know, they're not necessarily important. And there's just this, that point around prioritization mm-hmm. that can really spin out of control. And then also, I think, and this is where I think, you know, it's not an accident. It was my wife that observed this. Domestic things almost kind of get completely pushed out, because you're working so hard during the day that the thought of applying the same sort of stress and pressure, which is this, I think, the main mechanism by which people are using to just get by, mm-hmm. the thought of putting yourself through that at home as well does mean that the bills just, you know, get piled up, and you don't, it's not until it's too late when actually you're starting getting the second or third reminder that you realize that actually it needs to be dealt with, and that has big consequences. And, yeah. and also just the accumulation of the minor things, of just the small things that you should be just doing as a matter of course at home,
like a load of laundry.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, I've got a lot of experience in that.
Yeah, so building up of laundry, or forgetting to do the dishes, leaving out meat for dinner that you completely forgot about. Now it's spoiled. I mean, it's like you come home yeah. and you've worked so hard all day, and you've used every last bit of mental energy and dopamine yeah. in your system, and it's your medication's worn off. Anything you got from exercising is gone, and you can't function. All you want to do is yeah. just sit there and recharge. Like, you're a battery that has yeah. to be plugged in. And yeah, I think
exactly
a lot of people don't understand that, because for them it's easy to come home and just, you know, do the things they have to do, because they're not spending as much mental energy during the day.
Exactly.
What is the diagnostic process like there in Scotland? I know with the universal healthcare the national healthcare that you guys have, it's a lot different than what we have here. And I know you mentioned that it yeah. took about a year for you to get diagnosed. Is that because of a yeah. long waiting period, or just finding the right doctor? What kind of testing did you actually have to go through?
Yeah. So, I mean, I got diagnosed privately, and I think an awful lot of adults have to go through that route. In retrospect, I probably could have gone through the NHS route. But you know, before you even get to the issues you have in terms of waiting times, actually knowing where to start at all. You know, is this something that you go to your GP? I mean, that's your family doctor. Is that the person you speak to, or do you need to go see a therapist? Do I speak to a counselor first? Where do you start with this? And I think that's one of the biggest problems. Is I think an awful lot of adults just don't know who the appropriate person is to raise this as a topic of conversation. You know, and that's before you start, you know, hitting any of the other mm-hmm. issues around, you know, either the perceptions within the medical community, which are a big problem, or indeed issues around the way that the NHS, you know, our universal healthcare system, works in Scotland. The reality is that through the NHS system, it is incredibly variable from region to region. Some parts of Scotland, the NHS essentially refuses to accept any referrals for adults with suspected ADHD. Their stated policy being that if the presentation isn't made while the person is a child, then in essence, that there's not diagnosis to be made, which is incredibly frustrating. And I think in terms of my work, dealing with that and making sure that, that those policy barriers get removed, I think is really important. And you know, as a result of that, you will see very, very variable diagnosis rates in different parts of Scotland, and it's all based around that. But then again, once you have had that referral, I mean, people will very often wait between a year and 18 months in order to get a referral. Frankly, even if you want to go private, there's probably only one or two specialists in Scotland that will take private patients. So it's a pretty difficult route, whatever way you want to take it. And I think on both routes that there are issues. I mean, if you want a referral with the NHS, again, it's very dependent on your GP, your family doctor. There are a lot of people whose GPs simply won't make the referral because, quote unquote, they don't believe in ADHD. Mm. And likewise, if you do decide to go private and you get a private diagnosis, again, the same thing can happen, that the GP will just ignore it because it's a private diagnosis. And they then refuse to prescribe medication on the back of that. Now, I'm lucky. I have a good GP who, once I had that diagnosis, has followed up on that. I'm now an NHS patient. I see a psychiatrist once a year who is in adult mental health services within our NHS. You know, so the system right now is absolutely working for me. And I have to say, my part of Scotland, the NHS board here, has been very progressive, and I'm very lucky there. For an awful lot of adults, it's an uphill battle to get a diagnosis. It's an uphill battle once you have that diagnosis for it to be acted upon. And I think the other key thing I would say, and it's a big frustration both for adults and with children with ADHD, even once you've got that far, you've got a diagnosis, you're being prescribed, there is a real paucity of any other forms of therapy over and above that, both for the people with it and for the people with them. And I think the reality is if we want people to deal with their ADHD properly, you need all of those things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I am absolutely an advocate for medication. I think it's an important first step. Indeed, the national body who is overall in charge of our diagnosing and prescribing policies in the United Kingdom, which is called NICE, it states very clearly that it is the first line therapy for adults with ADHD. But it's only a first step.
Right.
You know, my phrase that I keep using is, you need pills and skills. And in order to develop those skills, A, you need complementary therapies, whether that's coaching or CBT. You know, and it will be different for different people what they find helpful. I have to say, I don't find CBT terribly helpful personally, but I know lots of people that do. Whereas I find coaching a lot more useful, sort of more direct and practical. But actually, the other critical thing, and I think this is where, you know, there are some of those sort of talking therapies and coaching therapies available, not as widely as I would like, but the help for the people who are the family members, the people who are around the person with ADHD, who are having to cope with it just as much as the individual themselves, mm-hmm. they're just not there at all. And I think we need all of those things. You know, some people might not want to take medication. I don't think it's a panacea, and I don't think it's necessarily right for everyone, but it should be available for those that want it and need it. But you definitely need all of those things available to people, because you need all the legs of a table for a table to be, you know, standing up.
No, absolutely. And a lot of what you said is similar here. I know I saw on the Scottish Coalition that you only have 15 support groups, and only 3 of those are for adults. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And that's That's sad, but it's very similar here. I think the numbers are similar when you count the number of support groups and clinics for children is far surpassing what they have for adults. And we have so many more adults that are being diagnosed because the inattentive type can go unnoticed for so long because it can be passed off as just being a kid or just being lazy or just not applying yourself. And so these people like us, we get misdiagnosed for other things, especially women. And
especially women. I mean, there's a massive gender issue here. It's huge. The diagnosis rates for, there is a real differential between men and women, but there's no science to show that there's actually any differential in the incidence of ADHD between men and women. And the way I put it is that we need to be very mindful of the quiet, wee, daydreamy girl at the back of the class as much as the naughty boy causing trouble at the front of the class.
Absolutely.
But we are not there yet. And that's... No. And I think there's a public perception issue here, but there's also a, I think there's an issue here for the teaching profession. I think this is, a lot of teachers would acknowledge this as well, is that they need the knowledge, the skills, and the technique to be able to both identify and work with these children. But in particular, I think if they did, they would spot that and spot it a lot earlier and be able to make referrals. So, I've got a lot of calls in terms of what I think needs to be done in order to improve the situation for people with ADHD. And I think first is better awareness. But I think making sure that we have the right training for education professionals, and then critically referral pathways so that actually educators can make a direct referral to the services that can be put in place to support people with ADHD. In many ways, a classroom is an ideal environment to be able to identify these issues, and therefore the people and the professionals who are in those contexts need to be able to do the identification and make the referrals. Until we're there, I think we're going to continue to have problems.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And with people still, even like you said, the clinicians and the professionals not believing in ADHD, it makes everything that much more difficult because you have to make them believe. And there's so much science that this is genetic. So these children that have ADHD, there is a very significant possibility that one or both of their parents do, or some other mental health illness that's going completely undiagnosed. And,
there's a wider social cost to all of this as well, which is it when I'm always slightly cautious about using these statistics. So I don't want people to think that everyone with ADHD is a criminal, but the reality is our prisons are massively overpopulated with people with
ADHD. Ours are the same way.
So it's estimated that 25% of the prison population has ADHD. Amongst the young offender population, it's estimated it's around 50%. If we could identify these people and help them earlier, we could avoid an awful lot of people, literally not just tens, I mean it's hundreds of thousands, probably millions of people worldwide.
Because it's the same here.
And in fact, prevent the crime that they've caused in the first place. I mean, the reality is that an awful lot of people either in prison are doing it because of poor impulse control. If they're taking and misusing substances, it's because they're self-medicating.
Yes.
We need to identify these people and treat them earlier so that they don't go down that path.
Yeah, that's exactly what the way it is here is people that don't know they have it are self-medicating just to try and get through their anxiety or get through their day or focus. So they're turning to the cocaine for their focus, or they're turning to heroin, or they're turning to the meth, because meth at its core, even though I hate to go here with it, it is a stimulant, and they can get it a whole lot easier than a lot of them can get it. It's so much easier for them to get it.
We need to have a big conversation about self-medication and identifying that. And then it starts with coffee and cigarettes.
It does. I mean,
one of the first things you potentially spot someone who's got ADHD is because they're the person who's you're probably drinking more coffee than is good for them. And I'm in that camp. I've always been a big coffee drinker. I think this is a wider point than just ADHD, because I think we need to look at substance misuse in the round. And it starts with the the very conventional and mundane substances that, that people might misuse, like caffeine. But actually, in terms of this space, in terms of social awareness, in terms of identifying people with ADHD, you're spotting that person who's always going for a cigarette break, always has a cup of coffee in their hand. It's like, are you self-medicating there maybe? I think that's an important question to ask so that we can do that early intervention.
No, absolutely. And I think that you're right, because like you said, I mean, you never would have thought you had ADHD unless someone told you. I never would have thought unless my husband brought it up to me, because it's so stereotyped that we can't see past it. And we can't even identify ourselves a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And then I think that, and then erasing the stigma around medication, because like you said, it is the first line. It's not the only we do. We need to focus on, you know, getting people more active and better nutrition and getting some of these garbage foods out of the way, even though we love them and they give us our dopamine hit. But, you know, mindful meditation has been shown to help and rewire some of the neural pathways to get a better stream of dopamine and other neurotransmitters that we need. And I think the talk therapy, the CBD, whether it works for you or somebody else, and there's some other therapies out there, but they all have to work together. It's not going to be just one or the other. And then you have the fact that ADHD seems to be more along the lines of autism, is where it's a spectrum disorder, because there are those people that can function without medication just fine. But then there's others like myself who need the medication so I can incorporate the other things, because without the medication, I can't stick to anything like that. I don't have the focus or the brain power. I've started. So, you know, I think it's a combination.
Absolutely it is. But I mean, the reality is that, you know, NICE, the, you know, National Institute for Clinical Excellence in the UK, it says that the medication is first line therapy for a reason, because it does help an awful lot of people who do have ADHD.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I've been quite, in a sense, militant around medication, just because there are so many myths about what it does and does not do. And it is, by the same token, so helpful for the people that we have a situation where we have some very unhelpful attitudes and stigmas around it. And it drives me absolutely crazy. The simple reality is this, is that, you know, people say, oh, well, it has such negative consequences and effects, and, you know, it can have so many benefits. Well, look, any pharmacological substance will have side effects and, you know, for, you know, potentially bad reactions. You know, you look at the side of a packet of paracetamol or aspirin or ibuprofen, there is a plethora of things that it can do. Likewise, I mean, there are medications that we take without second thought or any consideration for the wider consequences, but they can have a much more direct impact on your being. So I'm an asthmatic, and it's a straightforward fact for me. It makes me, my inhaler makes me much more anxious and jittery and on edge than my ADHD medication ever does. But I don't hear people going around saying, oh, don't let your child take their inhaler, it might affect them adversely. They don't.
Right.
Nor do we say to people, maybe you shouldn't take paracetamol or aspirin. Maybe you should just deal with it on your own terms. If people have a health condition, and if there's medication that can help with that health condition, you know, it's common sense. You take the medication for it. Yeah. Why is it different for our condition? And there is now so many studies, and they all point to the same thing. Yes, there are some things that you need to be careful of. It can affect growth in children, but that has been found to be very, very slight indeed. The reality is that we have been using methylphenidate now for decades.
Yes.
And there has not been an identification of any, you know, in any studies of any serious issues with it. Indeed, we've been using it probably in the way that we currently are for 20 or 30 years. And of course, some people will have issues. There are side effects. Some people may react badly, but that is just the same for any other medication. But the reality is by taking this medication, but a huge majority or a huge number of people with ADHD, and enables them to take back control of their lives. And that is good for them, but more importantly, it is good for their families and it is good for society. And I think that is the message that we really need to get out there very loudly and clearly. Unfortunately, we've also got a situation where lots of people are abusing medication that we find so helpful, but that does not mean that our medication itself is wrong for us or doesn't actually have a positive benefit. It is complicated, but we really need to be very clear about this. It is the best way for so many people tackling this condition that we have. And that is the same for a lot of people with a number of other health conditions with the medication they take. And I think we really need to tackle those stigmas and get that understanding out there.
It is so refreshing to have spoken to a politician who is so open with the fact that he has ADHD and such an advocate as well. I think here in the US, our politicians are too afraid that they may say anything that will be seen as a weakness and that can be used against them. And this is very unfortunate because they can instead focus on the things about ADHD that make them a better leader and role model by using their position to advocate just as Mr. Johnson does. I hope you have enjoyed this interview and that you watch the speech and full debate where the issue of ADHD is brought to the Scottish Parliament if you haven't already watched it. It's a very positive video and brings to light some of the struggles that our tribe has in Scotland that mirror the same issues that I've experienced here in the US. So if anyone listening is having trouble finding resources or support, please reach out to me and I will help you find what you need. And if I can't, I can at the very least get you to someone who can. I'm also going to put some links in the show notes to organizations in the US and Scotland that are helpful. I want to thank you all for listening and give a very special thank you to MSP Johnson for sparing time out of his extremely busy schedule to speak to me and for being so brave to speak out in the first place. To Mr. Johnson's assistant, Michael Adamson, who made all of this happen and to whom I am very grateful. I have a lot lined up in the coming weeks. I'll be discussing diagnosis and how the grieving process has affected me. I will also be discussing this topic with a grief specialist. I have a couple of interviews with people who want to tell their story. The International ADHD Conference is also coming up November 7th through the 9th, so I hope to be able to share some really cool things from that, and there might be some interviews or videos that result, so we'll see. Thank you for listening to Excuse My ADHD. If you like what you hear, don't forget to please subscribe, rate, and leave an awesome review. Show notes and social media links are available at www.excusemyadhd.com. Until next time.